This is March 14th, 2020 at the Shivananda Ashram in the Bahamas, and we're going to be looking at the yogic art of livelihood, and we're particularly looking at the problem with crossing fields. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani, Bhutani, Vasesa, Sundari, Pasipari, Sitani, Vandai, Hum, Shri Guru, Shri Utapadakamma, Shri Guru, and Vaishnavam, Shri Rupam, Sadhvajatam, Sadhana, Ravanakam, Dutam, Samsuditam, Sadhvaitam, Sadhvaditam, Nijama, Sahita, Krishna, Jaitam, Devam, Shri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sadhana, Ravita, Shri Vishakam, Dutam, Star, Vaishnavam, Shri Vishakam, Dutam, 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 So for those of you who weren't here yesterday, I'm just going to take a couple minutes to try to cover 3 hours worth of stuff. So you may feel a little lost for a while in this presentation today, but hopefully as we go through, things will become clearer. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Purana, all the way back to the Rig Veda, all the way back to the beginning of the universe, careers have been divided into four main categories, which we're going to be calling fields of work. Now, this term fields of work is different than if you say in the music field. It's not that kind of a field of work. We're looking at the different fields primarily in terms of their role in society, but also, especially as we're going to see in this session, in terms of their mood and their dharma. Now, these four fields have Sanskrit names, and the Sanskrit names refer to very complex, nuanced, and sort of difficult concepts. So we could have used the Sanskrit names, like we did with the six kinds of prosperity. But in this case, these Sanskrit words are very well known, and people may have a lot of wrong or pejorative concepts already associated with them. So my friend and co-author, Ruchira Dutta, and I decided to come up with our own one-word translations for them. So keep in mind that we're using these terms in a very specific way in this context. So these are the fields of artistry, the fields of resources, the fields of government, the fields of ideas. The fields of artistry provides all of the function and beauty in society. And does anyone remember the questions that those in the field of artistry ask about their work?
Is it supportive and is it beautiful?
Is it supportive and is it beautiful? Those in the field of resources are the only ones generating wealth. They're taking natural resources, land, water, air, animals, and they're creating food, clothing, medicines, and so forth. These are the people in agriculture, business, trade, and what are the main questions that they ask about their work?
Is it sustainable?
Yes, is it sustainable and is it regenerative? And that doesn't just apply to ecology, but it applies if their own work is sustainable. Then the field of government, these are the people who take care of the needs of everyone in society. Think of them as big parents. They make sure that everybody has food and clothing and water and electricity and, you know, defense from crime, defense from enemies, and so forth. And this can be on the level of a nation, the level of a city, the level of an apartment building. It can be a police officer, a firefighter, like that. It can also be people in NGOs, like people in the United Nations or other organizations like that. And these people are concerned with justice, fairness, and ethics in the society. And what are the main questions that they ask about their work?
Is it just
and is it honorable? Then we have the field of ideas. So these are the people who are disseminating wisdom, knowledge, guidance in society. They like to play with language or mathematics. These are the teachers. Most doctors are in this category. Religious leaders, researchers. And what are the main questions they ask about their work?
Is it true?
Is it true and is it wise? So yesterday we looked at defining these four fields, and then we looked at the qualities of people who work in these fields, and we looked at those qualities in two categories: the inclination to work in those fields, which might show up, is likely to show up in childhood, But often when it shows up in childhood, it shows up in ways that people may criticize. Why do you mind everybody else's business? Why are you always telling everybody what to do? Why are you so focused and you don't notice anything else that's around you? Why are you trying to teach everybody? Why are you always drawing birds and looking out the window? So it may show up in a way that people criticize. And then we looked at the expertise in terms of Dharma, in terms of the Sanskrit sacred writings. What are the qualities of those who are expert in each of these four fields? And we did, in going through those qualities, we certainly touched upon, and a lot of you were asking questions about, what happens when somebody who has the nature of one field works in another field. And this lens of what happens when somebody who has the nature in one field works in another field, which you and I believe gives the greatest evidence for why all these ancient Sanskrit writings divide the hundreds of thousands of careers into these four categories. Because they show that if you're not situated in a career that matches one's proclivities and one's nature, one will be very unhappy and cause havoc in society. So there's two verses in the Bhagavad Gita, one in chapter 3, text 35, and one in 18:47. They both have exactly the same two first lines. The third and fourth line in them differ. And they're making basically this point about do what you're supposed to do. Do what you're good at. So we can read them together. If you're able to read the Sanskrit, you can read that with Shreyan Swadharma Vibhuna Para Dharmat Swanustitat Swadharme Nidanam Shreya Para Dhammo Bhavayaha. We can read the English together. Don't jump into someone else's path, even if it seems so much easier and better than yours. It is better to endure the difficulties of your own path, because to walk a path meant for another is very dangerous. Swa means one's own. Dharma is one's duty. To follow one's own dharma. Pada dharma means the dharma of others. And here we're going to see at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, this is where all the teachings of the Gita are summarized. You see, the first two lines are exactly the same. Shreyan Swadharma Vibhuna Padadhammat Swanustitat. But the last two lines are different. Swabhava, that means one's own nature. Niyatam Karma Kurvan Napnoti Kilabhisham. We lost the I on the head, sorry. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, and to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Doing duty set by one's own nature, one incurs no offense. And this is an important point, because Krishna also states in the Bhagavad Gita that every duty has a fault, just like every fire has smoke. But if one is doing one's duty, one's livelihood, that matches one's nature, that's not considered a fault. One will not get a bad karmic reaction for the faults. Because there's always some faults. For the faults that happen as just inevitable consequences from being rightly situated. So this concept of following one's own path. That each of us has a path. Now, such is true in the ultimate existential level. 100 people are following the same spiritual discipline under the same teacher, but each of those 100 people have a somewhat different experience and a somewhat different path. But even when it comes to livelihood, we each have our own path. And we may look at our path and say, there's this problem, that problem. The problems on our own path are more suitable for us. There's a very old story in the Jewish tradition of these villagers who go to the local rabbi with all their troubles. And finally he says, put all your troubles in a bag and bring them to me tomorrow. So everyone in the village puts their troubles in a bag and brings them to the rabbi's house the next day. And he says, okay, now switch bags. So everybody takes somebody else's trouble home with them. And after a week, they're all begging the rabbi, can I have my own troubles back, please? When we're going to be looking at what career we're doing, or other major decisions in our life as well, This is going to sound very strange, but we don't want to just look at what we want to enjoy in that career, which is, we talked about the six kinds of wealth. We talked about what we like to play with. But also, what difficulties or sacrifices to us are worth it? What sacrifices and difficulties will we naturally and easily want to take up? Does that make sense for everybody? Just like at this point in my life, I've been in what's called the Vanaprastha Ashram now for 24 years. And I basically travel without any fixed residence. So many people have said to me, well, that must be very difficult. But it's a difficulty that I generally enjoy, because I'm enjoying the freedom and the renunciation of it. So the fact that I'm constantly adjusting to someone else's space and someone else's situation doesn't bother me very much. And it's like that with anything. You know, if you love taking care of your baby, you don't so much mind cleaning up the diapers or the nappies, depending on where you are in the world, what you call it. It's just, you just accept that as part of the job. Does this make sense to everybody? Yes? If you're in a relationship with someone that you love, all relationships, by the way, have their downsides. You're not going to find a relationship where there's no difficulty. Good luck with that one. But if you really love someone, then the difficulties to you are not very meaningful. In fact, often we're happy to accept the difficulties involved with a situation that we love. So does this make sense to you? So often when we're looking at a career or a major life decision, we can say, are the difficulties of this path ones that I can embrace happily? And there's the verse up in the room where I'm having my meals, Bhagavad Gita 4:24, that when one is in the proper consciousness, everything merges into transcendence. They're really, the difference between what I'm enjoying and what I'm sacrificing disappears. Everything becomes pleasure. However, if we're on the wrong path, that doesn't work. If we're on the wrong path, it becomes about, well, I don't like this, but I'm tolerating it to get some result, which might even be just a paycheck. If we're really on the wrong path, we're not even getting the six kinds of prosperity that we enjoy. Right? All we're getting is survival, like an animal. And if we're really, really on the wrong path, it's only sacrifice. There's no pleasure at all. So if we're like partially on the wrong path, this is trouble, I don't like this, but at least I get something. And if we're really on the wrong path, it's all misery. One effect of being in the wrong field is we have a feeling of being inauthentic. Now, even the best actors don't stay in character all the time. Right? If an actor goes home and they stay in character, it's a disturbance to everybody. And it becomes exhausting. Maybe we can think of a situation like that. We were in a situation where, you know, we didn't belong there. We knew we didn't belong there. It's like, this is not my place. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, we just felt really uncomfortable. And we were constantly having to pretend to be somebody that we aren't, and to act in ways that just are not comfortable for us. Well, like for myself, I'm a very big picture person. I don't like working. I can work with details for a while, and twice in a temple ashram, I was the treasurer. I mean, I did a good job, but it was killing me. You know, I remember one time when the accounts were a penny off, right? And I was like, you've got to figure it out, I was told. You've got to figure out, where is the penny off? And I'm like, really? You know, it was just torturous. So that's the first thing that happens to us is psychological. And when we're in that kind of psychological situation, it's very hard for us to connect with the divine. In one sense, we can connect with the divine, with Krishna, with Bhagavan, in any situation. Because Bhagavan is everywhere and everything. However, if we're not properly situated, it becomes very difficult. It becomes like a phone that has a bad connection that keeps breaking. And you have to, you're struggling so much just to keep the connection. Well, another very interesting thing that happens in the first verse from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have that another's path is called Bhayavaha. Bhaya means fear. And Vaha means a vehicle. Becomes our work becomes a vehicle of fear when we're doing somebody else's work. When we're in the wrong field. So what does this mean? My own doctoral dissertation was on job satisfaction, and we looked at a model from Hertzberg where he talks about what makes us intrinsically happy with our work. And one of them is the work itself, the nature of the work. And then he talked about a lot of other factors, like the temperature of the place that we work at, the mood among the colleagues, how the supervision is organized. And he said those are all external factors. He said those are factors that don't make you happy in your work, but they can make you unhappy. So if your place of work is too cold, you may feel unhappy, but if it's the right temperature, that doesn't make you satisfied with your work. It can be bad, but it can't be positive. Now, what we've noticed happens if a person's in the wrong field, they're not getting satisfaction from the work itself, because the work itself doesn't connect with them. Again, it's like eating food that doesn't suit you. Right, eating food that gives you a stomachache. And when we're not getting satisfied from the work itself, we tend to focus on the externals. We tend to focus on how is my boss treating me? How is, you know, what? How much gossip is going on in the workplace? How comfortable is my chair? What's the temperature of the room? How much am I getting paid? The research shows that how much people get paid, once people are above, you know, scarcity. Once a person is not actually, you know, literally in poverty and scarcity, then how much people get paid has nothing to do with job satisfaction, unless it's tied to advancement. So if money is a symbol of mastery and advancement, it's meaningful. But in and of itself, it doesn't give satisfaction. But if the work itself isn't satisfying us, then we may be focused on the money or on the benefits. And we'll start to complain. Now, this isn't right, that isn't right. But the work becomes a source of fear for us. It becomes a source of anxiety for us. And I believe that there's a lot of people in the world now who are in this kind of a situation. They're not situated in a field that's conducive for them, that's in harmony with them. And so they're very much focused on the externals of their work, and with a lot of complaints and angst about it. And then think about this factor in terms of connection with the spiritual. Because spiritual is an internal state of consciousness. And again, we can access it in any situation. There are people who became enlightened in Soviet labor camps. I mean, it's not that there's any circumstance that prevents enlightenment and self-realization. But if one is in a work situation where one's consciousness is very outward to the externals and in a mood of complaining rather than gratitude, that's going to make it a lot more difficult to get one's consciousness in the right place. So we looked at general things. Now we're going to look at very specific wrong combinations. And we're looking pretty...